නමෝ භගවතේ වාසුදේවාය ඕම් නමෝ භගවතේ වාසුදේවාය ඕම් නමෝ භගවතේ වාසුදේවාය Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, Chapter 5, Text 36. Shri Daksha Uvacha Aho Asadho Sadhunam Shri Daksha Uvacha Aho Asadhu Sadhunam සාදු ලිංගේ නනස්ත්වයා අසාද්ව කාර්යාර්භකාණාම් භික්ෂෝර් මාර්ග ප්‍රදර්ශිතහ Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada Translation, Prajapati Daksha said, Alas, Narad Muni, you wear the dress of a saintly person, but you are not actually a saint. Indeed, although I am now in Grihastha life, I am a saintly person. By showing my sons the path of renunciation, you have done me an abominable injustice. Very extensive purport on this verse by Srila Prabhupada. Are you splitting in half? No. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Sanyasira Alpa Chidra Sarva Loke Gai. Madhyalila 12.51. In society, one will find many sannyasis, vanaprasthas, grihasthas, and brahmacharis. But if all of them properly live in accordance with their duties, they are understood to be sadhus. Prajapati Daksha was certainly a sadhu because he had executed such great austerities that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Vishnu, had appeared before him. Nevertheless, he had a fault-finding mentality. He improperly thought Narad Muni to be a sadhu or non-saintly because Narada had foiled his intentions. Desiring to train his sons to become grihasthas fully equipped with knowledge, Daksha had sent them to execute austerities by Nara and Saras. Narad Muni, however, taking advantage of their highly elevated position in austerity, instructed them to become Vaishnavas in the renounced order. This is the duty of Narad Muni and his followers. They must show everyone the path of renouncing this material world and returning home back to Godhead. Prajapati Daksha, however, could not see the exaltedness of the duties Narad Muni performed in relation to his sons. Unable to appreciate Narad Muni's behavior, Daksha accused Narada of being a sadhu. The word Bhikshor Marga, the path of the renounced order, are very significant in this regard. A sannyasi is called Tridandi Bhikshu because his duty is to beg alms from the homes of grihasthas and to give the grihasthas spiritual instructions. A sannyasi is allowed to beg from door to door, but a grihastha cannot do so. Grihasthas may earn their living according to the four divisions of spiritual life. A brahmana grihastha may earn his livelihood by becoming a learned scholar and teaching people in general how to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He may also assume the duty of worship himself. Therefore, it is said that only brahmanas may engage in deity worship, and they may accept as prasad whatever people offer the deity. Although a brahmana may sometimes accept charity, it is not for his personal maintenance, but for the worship of the deity. Thus, a brahmana does not stock anything for his future use. Similarly, kshatriyas may collect taxes from the citizens, and they must also protect the citizens, enforce rules and regulations, and maintain law and order. Vaishyas should earn their livelihood through agriculture and cow protection, and Shudras should maintain their livelihood by serving the three higher classes. Unless one becomes a brahmana, one cannot take sannyas. Sannyasis and brahmacharis may beg alms door to door, but a grihastha cannot. Prajapati Daksha condemned Narad Muni because Narada, a brahmachari who could beg from door to door, had made sannyasis of Daksha's sons who were being trained to be grihasthas. Daksha was extremely angry at Narada because he thought that Narada had done him a great injustice. According to Daksha's opinion, Narad Muni had misled Daksha's inexperienced sons, Asadhu Akari Arbakarnam. Daksha regarded his sons as innocent boys who had been misled when Narad showed them the renounced order of life. Because of all these considerations, Prajapati Daksha charged that Narad Muni was Asadhu and should not have adopted the dress of a sadhu. Sometimes a saintly person is misunderstood by Grihasthas, especially when he instructs their young sons to accept Krishna consciousness. Generally, a Grihastha thinks that unless one enters Grihastha life, he cannot properly enter the renounced order. If a young man immediately adopts the path of the renounced order in accordance with the instructions of Narada or a member of his disciplic succession, his parents become very angry. This same phenomenon is occurring in our Krishna consciousness movement because we are instructing all the young boys in the Western countries to follow the path of renunciation. We allow Grihastha life, but a Grihastha also follows the path of renunciation. Even a Grihastha has to give up so many bad habits that his parents think his life has been practically destroyed. We allow no meat eating, no illicit sex, no gambling and no intoxication. And consequently, the parents wonder how, if there are so many no's, one's life can be positive. In the Western countries, especially, these four prohibited activities practically constitute the life and soul of the modern population. Therefore, parents sometimes dislike our movement. Just as Prajapati Daksha disliked the activities of Narada and accused Narada of dishonesty. Nevertheless, although parents may be angry at us, we must perform our duty without hesitation because we are in the disciplic succession of Narad Muni, from Narad Muni. Last paragraph. People addicted to household life wonder how one can give up the enjoyment of Grihastha life, which is a concession for sex enjoyment, simply to become a mendicant in Krishna consciousness. They do not know that the householder's concession for sex life cannot be regulated unless one accepts the life of a mendicant. The Vedic civilization therefore enjoins that at the end of one's 50th year, one must give up household life. This is compulsory. However, because modern civilization is misled, householders want to remain in family life until death, and therefore they are suffering. In such cases, the disciples of Narad Muni advise all the members of the younger generation to join the Krishna consciousness movement immediately. There is nothing wrong in this. So in this fifth chapter of the sixth canto, entitled Narad Muni Cursed by Prajapati Daksha, the chapter is aptly named, and now we are at the exact juncture where this thing happens. We saw so far how Narad Muni knew that Prajapati Daksha is engaged in begetting sons. His reason for begetting sons is to populate the earth. And he has his own reality, he has his own frame of reference, he has his own priority. So he's right in what he's doing. Especially when he thinks that now these boys have to take responsibility in the material world, especially as Grihasthas, the first duty is to engage in austerity. So even if someone wants to, even if somebody wants to entertain the idea that I want to see how Grihastha life can be suitable for helping me in my spiritual life, the very first process, the very first step is to engage in austerity. Now just like in an academy, that academy may be famous for producing geniuses, brilliant scholars, still there would be some people who are the laggards, the not so bright in that academy. Conversely, if there is some school or academy which is famous for producing dullards, there could be some people who are a little bright among them. So it's not that spiritual life is some kind of assembly line process where you just tag along and you absolutely do nothing to progress. I think yesterday's question was, if Prajapati Daksha had the audience of the Lord, you could see him, you could offer prayers, why didn't become a pure devotee? Then we have to understand how one becomes a pure devotee. Although in the Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada calls the bhakti process the Raj Marg, the royal road, the royal highway. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, the bhakti process is compared to such a big road that you run with your eyes closed and you won't meet with any accident. Normally, if somebody wants to cross even a simple city road, you have to be very careful. Look this way, look that way. So that's the analogy given, that bhakti marg is so wide and you are so protected. There is not much heavy traffic. In the Bhagavad Gita, or maybe in the Nectar of Instruction, Prabhupada talks of one is dragged towards success. This process drags you towards success. And then we like these kind of sentiments. I like a process which drags me towards success, whether I do something or not. This I do something or not is illusion. The independence a living entity has is never taken away from him or her. Never under any situation. This is a very extensive purport, and Prabhupada has commented on some deep sociological issues. We may not be able to discuss that for the very good reason that I am not qualified to speak on that. But things which I just come to my mind, I was hearing a lecture by Garuda Prabhu, who is a disciple of Prabhupada and a good scholar, about this thing as to yesterday's question as to why he didn't accept the process immediately, why he just couldn't become a pure devotee immediately. Garuda Prabhu was talking with some students about why we have to understand this basic concept that there is free will. There is no question of understanding any truth about spiritual life unless we understand the simple truth that there is free will. So he related how he heard two girls talking to each other and in a Western college in America. And he said, I was not eavesdropping. I was not trying to hear what they were saying. But they were talking loudly in the veranda, in the lobby. And one girl asked the other one, is so-and-so actually in love with you? And she said, he better be, otherwise I will kill him. So he said, that's a good point. So he started his discussion in college by asking his students, all students of theology, that you ask as to why God created this, why God created that, how can there be a just God, without properly understanding the concept of free will. Since I am your professor, if you all, the entire class as one body, if you do not like me, I will fail all of you. And then he saw them and they were like, what happened to him? He said, okay, is that not a threat? If you do not love me, I will kill all of you. And some of them started laughing. Some of them were confused. But I am the professor here. For this subject, I am the only authority in this college. There is no one above me. He said, now do you understand? That this one sentiment, of course, love is encompassing. Without love, there can't be trust, there can't be honesty, there can't be nothing existing in this world if there is no love. Take a simple case. We urge people, like sometimes it's funny to find in India, do not give bribes or do not accept bribes. Now it's nice to see that as a sort of a movement, but does anyone believe in that? Please keep the station clean. If people love railways, they would do it. Obviously, because they don't, so no one cares for it. Love your country, love your this, love your that. So he said, I could give the students a first-hand experience that love is something which cannot be forced. It has to spring from within. And I cannot love an inanimate object. This glass is sitting here as an obedient servant. And I may say that, get out, I don't like the look of your face. And I may throw it away. And it may, without any complaint, go somewhere. It can show, or it can exhibit all the traits or behavior of a very loving, obedient personality. But I won't be convinced that this obeys me or this loves me, because it has no independence. It has no independence to say that, no, today I am not going to serve you. It is an inanimate object. So in this material world, we confuse love, trust, subordination by making somebody at the level of an inanimate object. In one sense, it's not completely wrong, but we should not misunderstand it. When Prabhupada says, a pure devotee's life is like a well-oiled machine. In the Bhagavad Gita, 5th canto purports, Prabhupada says, he's like a sold-out animal. Or he's like a baby in the lap of the mother. But that doesn't mean that this small gem, it is called Satantrata Ratna. It's a gem, it's a precious jewel, and it can never be taken away. So why is Prajapati Daksha angry with someone who has given his sons a much higher level of existence? It could be anything. You know, why mess around with my job? Don't you have anyone else out to preach to? It could be so many things. So first of all, Prajapati Daksha's frame of reference or his circle of understanding what constitutes good service is very limited. And Narad Muni is acting on a very, very different level, a very high level. So here we see, normally in Srimad Bhagavatam, you're not accustomed to seeing abuse words or swear words. But here we see an outburst. Aho, aho is in a sense, alas. Asadho, sadhu nam. This guy calls himself a sadhu. He's just the opposite. Sadhu lingena. To call someone, you are sadhu only in the dress of a sadhu. That means you are not. And Prabhupada gives us the mentality, I am not wearing one such dress, but I am. So normally, it's not enough to prove that someone is bad. I am good too. So why I am good? Because he is bad. That's typical of this material world. So in this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs, Prabhupada has commented on a very wide gamut of issues, mainly sociological. So in the beginning, Prabhupada talks of, and incidentally, since it's an offense, today is Devanand Pandit's disappearance. And this is one great personality whom Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally arranged that he could be saved from his offenses. So we'll see that later. So the beginning of this understanding of how to execute Grihastha Ashram properly is that there has to be austerity as the basis of it. It is ashrama. His Holiness Radha Govind Maharaj, in one of his classes, described that shrama is labor. Shrama is labor. We call perspiration as shrama bindu. So these four stages of life is where there is some labor going on. There is some activity. Ashrama. That means the full spectrum of it. And the opposite of that, where there is no desire to engage in hard work for spiritual realization, that is called a Grihamedi life. Grihamedi, Prabhupada once gave an example. Previously, oil would be crushed out of sesame seeds or groundnuts. By crushing them, there would be a pole and a bull would be going around all day. In fact, I was in our Gokuldham ashram, Belgaum. They are making traditional quality cement by mixing three or four ingredients and having two bulls go around it all day. So that's an age-old practice. So the bulls are going. They practically could be traveling 40-50 kilometers by going around. But if you find at the end of the day, where are they? At the same place. So the analogy is that a Grihamedi works very hard. In terms of distance traversed, he has gone very far. But he is attracted to the center point, that is enjoyment. So working hard, being very conscious, trying to expand material knowledge and doing so many things, only one center point. That is my own bodily enjoyment. Therefore it is called a Griha Medhi. Medhi is that pole. While Grihastha Ashram is where practically self-realization is the main goal. So Prabhupada makes it very clear here. Prajapati Daksha, however, could not see the exaltedness of the duties Narad Muni performed. In one class, Jananivas Prabhu explained that we may give up family life in the material world. But the way Lord Chaitanya has showed us the path, what are we going to do when we go there? It's going to be another family. We join Krishna's family. Whatever rasa, whatever swarup, whatever thing we may have, we are going to be a part of Krishna's family. So family life is not to be condemned per se, but the notion that I should serve only my family, this particular idea that my son, you should serve only me, Sridhar Maharaj used to joke, in the West, it's so difficult to preach to the youth. They cannot take up the process of chanting Hare Krishna because of Mahapap. These four activities, illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating and gambling. In India, the same challenge, same difficulty. But there is not much of Mahapap, but there is Mahabap. They prevent them. So, Prabhupada comments that we allow Grihastha life, but a Grihastha also follows the path of renunciation. But mostly, parents, especially in the Western world, think that his life is practically destroyed. Badrinarayan Prabhu once related a story of someone who was doing drugs. selling drugs. And one day, the police were after him, so he jumped over the wall, entered the temple, and very cautiously saw and said that I would like to join the temple. So he joined the temple. After 6 months, he thought I should come clean. So he told the temple president that, actually, I am running away from the police. I have a drugs record. He said, well, then you better go and clean things up. And again come back, no problem with that. So he went to the police. And they were surprised that somebody could just come and surrender like that. And they knew him. So they produced him before the magistrate. And he said, okay, for all that you have done, but since you came on your own and you surrendered, I have decided to show you some leniency. And he said, okay, the fines and everything, it all goes away. You just serve for 6 weeks. And he agreed. He said, by the way, what were you doing in that temple, the Hare Krishna temple? So he described the lifestyle. Wake up at 3:45, Mangalarti, chanting 16 rounds, serving in the kitchen, serving food for life, distributing books. He said, what about recreation? He said, well, that's all my life would be. And he said, and he added, and they also follow the four regulative principles. He said, that is worse than jail. I release you. You don't even need to spend those 6 weeks in jail. If this is the kind of lifestyle you are living there, I don't have any problems with you. So, like even in jail, some of these things are available. Like Prabhupada says here, if there are so many no's, one's life cannot be positive. And practically, why do we think that so many, why these things are necessary in life? Because the economy has been running on these four activities. So people with money are showing that money to people who don't have money and saying that we are enjoying because we have so much money. Now we may come to the understanding that they are not actually enjoying, which is also a fact. If all people with money are enjoying, then who are the ones who are committing suicides? Who are the ones who are waiting outside psychiatrists' offices? Who are the ones who are taking all these over-the-counter pills? Prozac, Dispirin, painkillers. Who are the ones who are doing that? So obviously, this is not enjoyment, that you go from one painkiller to another painkiller, which is a much more powerful one. But the fact is that they have conquered the economy. And they have brainwashed everyone else into thinking that unless you have money, you can't win. So even innocent people, they think like that. That I have to... Okay, I don't want to be a demon. If you ask somebody, you want to be a demon? No, of course not. You want to be an atheist? Well, not really. But I want money. That there is no escape. So this is how we find in Kali Yuga, the present Kali Yuga atmosphere which we are living in, it seems like we are helpless. Why does Srila Prabhupada speak so strongly that devotees coming in the disciplic succession from Narad Muni should tell the youth, immediately join? Seems like Prabhupada is a fanatic, or he's on a recruitment drive. What exactly? In fact, Harivilas Prabhu, one of the earlier temple presidents of Paris, he's now preaching in America, he related how in France, Prabhupada told him that, when I came to the West, I said, I'll make only sannyasis, that's all. If you want to join the Hare Krishna movement, you join only as a sannyasi. But then he saw the hippies coming with their girlfriends and so many girls coming. He said, fine, marriage, the boy gives the girl a son, or a daughter, the mother and child go to Vrindavan, the son takes sannyas and preaches. That's it. And then Prabhupada said, but no. Then I started arranging marriages. And then we know the history. Then he started arranging for divorces. Then he had to preside over someone marrying for the second time or the third time. And then one day in 1974 or something, he said, I give up. No more coming to me for any of your marital decisions. Go to your GBC or your temple president. So Prabhupada is not a fanatic. Nor is Narad Muni a fanatic. This is, we are not witnessing some kind of one-upmanship, if you know the word. It's not like there is an intense competition between the Grihastha community and the Sannyas community to somehow keep their numbers, to keep their turf as clear as possible. How do we know this can happen? Because we can certainly misunderstand what is competition in the spiritual life. It happened. Historically, it is there for all of us to see, visit, read the pages of Lilamrit. Two great sannyasis, Tamal Krishna Goswami and Vishnujan Maharaj, had, in fact, and could be, one of the most powerful mobile preaching units ever to operate on this planet Earth. 5 Greyhound buses, 80 devotees, and it was like a, it would go like a blizzard through a town, like set the whole city on fire, like that. And there were two powerful people, very fixed up. But then things also would happen which were not very savory, not very favorable, palatable. For example, a very small thing. Of course, we have to respect the temple presidents who were Grihasthas at the time and the sannyasis, both of them. This bus party was parked in front of a temple, in a lawn. And the brahmacharis would never go to the temple for Mangal Aarti, for Tulsi Puja, for any programs. They would have their own program in the lawn, a rousing, much more louder program than the temple. And they would cook their own food, offer it to Krishna, own bhoga. But they took something from the bus party. The bus party would take some facility from the temple, and the sannyasis would give lectures in the temple hall for the Sunday guests or whatever. So one temple president said, this is too much. These people come and they live like they are in their own world. So he told them that since you took gasoline, you took this, you took fuel, you took this, that, bhoga, you have to pay the temple so many dollars. And they gave a reply. So we gave 2 classes, $1,000 each. We sang for 4 hours, $1,000 per hour. Something outrageous. So that was the mood. Finally, in 1975, it came to a head with the brahmacharis having their own book distribution party, and 4 or 5 temple president, the Grihasthas, united. It was like a do-or-die situation. Who wins? The party which wins will settle the matter forever. Are Grihasthas suitable for spiritual life, or is it only the domain of sannyasis and brahmacharis? And since Prabhupada himself stoked the fire of competition, it was becoming very, very heavy. And finally, Rameshwar Swami announced the results. The Grihasthas temple presidents had defeated the BBT Library Party and the Radha Damodar Traveling Sankirtan Party. Prabhupada said, if Tamal hears this, his heart will crack. However, there was a silver lining. The number of books distributed by the Grihasthas was more, but the Lakshmi remitted by the Travelling Sankirtan Party was more. So we can take from this that Krishna never likes unhealthy competition. Especially when the competition is to show, I am better than you. So both parties, savoring the sweet taste of success, came to Mayapur and put the whole thing before Prabhupada. You decide now. These people come and preach to the brahmacharis in the temple. Don't be in Maya. They say, what do you mean by that? Don't be in Maya means don't be in the temple. Temple life is Maya. Come, travel with us. So the temple president would find that the fruit offering is not made. What happened? Well, the brahmachari left. So he would be in such a deep state of trouble, confusion. Finally, it came to pass that some temples had put like a quarantine kind of thing, that this bus should not come within 5 kilometers of our temple. Now just imagine, we joined Hare Krishna movement to be Das, Das, Dasanu Das. But then we claim the land, the water, the air, the ether, all the living entities within this particular area to be mine. Even karmis sometimes do not claim or do not become so arrogant or so attached. So that danger is there. Jaidvait Maharaj, at that time Jaidvait Das Brahmachari, was seen as the friend of both parties because he was shastrically very astute and he would never take sides. So he was made the spokesperson. Both of them said, we trust him. You know, sometimes Narad Muni is trusted by both. Both parties, demons, devotees, acharyas, aborigines, cannibals, hunters, whoever. Other species even, snakes. They can even talk to him, relate to him, reveal their heart to him. So Prabhupada understood everything. And then Prabhupada gave something like plucking out from transcendence. He said, this is not the goal of our movement, that we become so big that we actually fight among each other. Kiba vipra, kiba nyasi, shudra kene noy, jai krishna tatva veta, sei guru hoy. Prabhupada said, we don't care who preaches in what garb, what dress. Jai Krishna Tattva Vetta, one who knows Krishna Tattva, he is to be accepted as Guru. So there is no need for this fighting. And just like blind men, those 5 blind men who would touch a various part of an elephant and would claim that this elephant, this animal is like a rope, or this animal is like a winnow. This animal is like a wall. This animal is like whatever, a pipe. All of them were having reality in their grasp. But it took someone to remove their blindfold and they see the whole thing. So Prabhupada did that. And of course Prabhupada did one more thing. When he saw that the brahmacharis and sannyasis were attached to that number game, or It was proving to be counterproductive, he stopped the Radha Damodar Sankirtan party. Just imagine, the one who began it, he himself stopped it. Because that's not the goal. So Narad Muni, his life is being dictated by the urge, by the desire to serve Krishna. If Narad Muni would have been like a normal preacher, I would say a conditioned soul who was attached to some results or credits, normally when you get cursed, you curse in return. How do you say that? Somebody may say, I didn't curse in return. Was there a registration somewhere that this person cursed me? Even if that is there, or I don't find sufficient words to curse you right now. Let the whole insult sink in properly, then I will do something. No, he doesn't do that. He just accepts it. He just accepts it, thinking that whatever happens, happens by the will of Krishna, and certainly there is some reason behind it, and I could use it in Krishna's service. Imagine, he thinks that he can even use a curse in Krishna's service. So regarding this offensive mentality, people like Daksha Prajapati, we can call it a bit hasty thing, we can call it a bit of premature or immaturity. But the fact is that Daksha also is a very exalted personality. And we need to take this lesson that we may actually climb up the ladder, we may actually come to some stage. Of course, we may wonder, how come Daksha Prajapati could get such exalted prayers like the Hamsa Goya prayers? Seems incompatible. Somebody could praise the Lord so much with such depth and then curse a devotee of the Lord. It is said that the prayers were not his actually. They were already famous prayers. He just recited them. They're not his original composition in one sense. That explains this behavior also. So, Dina Hina Jata Chilo Hari Name Uddarilo. Sometimes Prabhupada says, Papi Tapi Jata Chilo Hari Name Uddarilo. So, this urge to commit an offense is like a basic material urge. Just like the basic spiritual urge is to serve. How service is all pervading in the spiritual world. Everyone just wants to serve you and you want to serve others. So similarly, everyone wants to offend you and you want to offend others. It could be compared to that level. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed through his behavior and through his forgiveness how he forgave the offenses of others. The story behind Devanand Pandit's so-called offense, he was a Bhagavati, a Bhagavat speaker, professional. And professional means he would recite in a very nice way, people would appreciate, he would get some alms, he would maintain himself like that. That was his profession. One day, Srivas Thakur, Srivas Pandit, happened to be, by the way, Srivas is Narad Muni, same person here. So Srivas Thakur was in audience. Devotees like Srivas Thakur do not need to understand the particular level of the speaker. They are in their own wavelength. So even though normally when we say for a conditioned person, you cannot take more realization than what the speaker is giving. But devotees like Narad, like Srivas Thakur, they don't have this condition. For example, Prabhupada would see a drama and tears would come from his eyes. Not that he was especially attracted to some particular subtle nuance in histrionics, in dramatics. But that remembrance would transport him to the Leela. So Srivas Thakur began to cry. And seeing this, some of Devanand Pandit's disciples just whisked him away. Just took him away. And he didn't do anything. And that was seen as an offense. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, being Antaryami, knew this. So one day Devanand Pandit was speaking. This is Kuliagram. There is something called Kulia Pada. It's a modern creation. Prabhupada says that's not the original Kulia. Original Kuliagram means today's entire Navadip town. So in Navadip town, known at that time as Kuliagram, Devanand Pandit was giving one of his routine Bhagavat recitations. And Mahaprabhu was passing away. And from afar, from outside, he said, "To hell with your knowledge of Bhagavatam. You don't have any devotion." And he was very surprised. Not just surprised, he was very afraid. And he could know that Lord Chaitanya doesn't approve. He doesn't accept me as having any feeling for Srimad Bhagavatam. But one day, again according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes, vivida prakare papi nistarila. Through various means, through various ways in which a particular papi, a particular aparadi can be delivered, Lord Chaitanya did that. It just like Yamaraj, his job is to devise various punishments for various offenses. Lord Chaitanya has to devise various ways in which various offenders can escape Yamaraj's punishment. So, Vakreshwar Pandit, one of the, is Tungavidya in Krishna Leela, expert singer, expert dancer. The Chaitanya Charitamrita describes that Devanand Pandit was very happy to receive Vakreshwar Pandit. And Vakreshwar Pandit revealed to him the essence of Lord Chaitanya's gift of pure love of Godhead, pure Krishna Prema. By Vakreshwar Pandit's blessings, the offense or the offensive mentality in Devanand Pandit's life, in his heart, that got erased. So therefore, even if we go today to Navdeep town, there is this place called Aparadha Bhanjan Sthali. Also, Lord Chaitanya saved Gopal Chapal through another offender for at the lotus feet of Srivas Thakur. So offenses are something which we are born with. We may not have to find out. There is a prayer, all those who do deity worship, they have to recite it. Aparadha sahasrani kriyante aharnisham maya daso aham iti matva kshamasva madhusudana. Aharnisham, day and night I am committing so many offenses. So therefore, what we learn from this pastime is that we may be right from our frame of reference, but unless we know what is motivating someone else to do it, and if we do not take care, we may run into great trouble. So people like Daksha Prajapati, they get audience of the Lord, they get a mundane post, they get a designation, but the fact is that they have to remain here. Like Indra, he fought with Prithu Maharaj, he fought with Vritrasur as a Chitraketu when he became Vritrasur. Although in the body of a demon, he went back to Godhead, while Indra had to remain here. So therefore, at the very end, Prabhupada says that because modern civilization is misled, so Prabhupada took some extreme decisions. We find, if you read Prabhupada's letters, somebody is saying that, Prabhupada, what should I do now? You take sannyas. So just like that, like an instant sannyas machine, Prabhupada just produced so many. In fact, now, historically speaking, we, the second generation, we can actually debate on this. Not debate in the sense of contending who is right, who is wrong. But at least I heard one senior Prabhupada disciple, very maturely speaking on this particular issue, that certainly this is something which is not to be imitated and it is not done now. Do we see any 21, 23 year olds just taking sannyas like that? No. Prabhupada did it for a specific purpose. And therefore, we also have to understand, like Prabhupada said, if you want to manage this movement, do as I did. But do as I did doesn't mean we can imitate everything what he did. One thing which I really cherish is when I heard once Romapad Maharaj, it was a Mayapur Bhagavatam class, and he was speaking, there was a discussion about Buddhists and Mayavadis, how they are so close to Vaishnava philosophy. So one Prabhupada disciple asked, Prabhupada Maharaj, that how do we understand this? Prabhupada taking different kinds of stances and all of them are like pointed ones. Like here, Prabhupada is saying that the members of the younger generation should be joining the Krishna consciousness movement immediately. That's all. No questions asked. And in the second canto, Swayambhu Manu's lifestyle, you may find there is no need to join full time. You stay at home, do your bhakti, no problem. But do it like Swayambhu Manu, Mangalarti every day. So he said, in that purport, Prabhupada is very, very sort of narrow-minded. In this purport, he is broad-minded. And my policy is to just do justice to Prabhupada's particular sentiment at that time. So therefore, I am speaking from that particular point of view today. Because when we wish to give to the world a worldwide movement, we are not here to give a Bengali movement or a Maharashtrian movement or a South Indian movement or Indian movement. We need to give the world a worldwide movement. And in the worldwide class of devotees, we will have all kinds of people coming in. They all should find their particular bearing in Krishna consciousness. Even if you feel a little bit deficient, that's good. Even Prabhupada said, when I met my spiritual master, I should have joined immediately, but I was in Maya. Of course, no one believes Prabhupada is in Maya, but he just said like that. So, in this particular purport, it seems that this particular strong sentiment is more towards Daksha Prajapati completely getting confused about the designs of Narad Muni, why he is behaving like that. So lest Narad Muni's followers commit offenses at his feet, Prabhupada is protecting us by saying that there is nothing wrong in preaching like this, because Narad Muni is acting on a very high level. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah.